And he's also in a movie called Crossing Jordan, which earlier on in the conversation I was talking about the Jordan in reference to Michael Jordan or Air Jordan, and how the Jordan's role biblically in the Bible with Lazarus when the pigs when he takes the spirits out of Lazarus, sends them into the pigs, and the pigs drown themselves in the Jordan. This guy's in Crossing Jordan. But whatever. I mean, he's in a lot of things, I think.
Ferrer Jordan.
As a really stupid sink, Crossing Jordan in the basketball world is typically associated with Allen Iverson because he had a really famous crossover on Michael Jordan that everybody knows about. And AI, obviously, is his nickname, but his also, other nickname is The Answer. So.
That's excellent, man.
Sort of a ridiculous.
Well, what did it say when I'm looking at this guy's thing, Mike Miguel Furr, it says related news, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? It's just they're putting it out on Blu-ray. It's just funny. I'm like, what? Why am I looking at Who Framed Roger Rabbit here? I'm related to Miguel Furr, that guy in your episode there. Okay.
Yeah, if you guys can find this episode, I think it'll be worth finding out. So, well, okay, is this related news? I see what you're saying. Who Framed Roger Rabbit debuts March 12, 2013 on Blu-ray. So, that looks like top news on IMDb right now. So we have Jackie Robinson's 42 is the top of Google, and top of IMDb is Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Weird.
Remember how we were talking last week about the movie that just doesn't sync at all. And that, you know, it's actually impossible. But I love how what people are saying is the worst movie ever made right now is that movie called Movie 43. So it's one number removed from 42.
It doesn't sync. I cracked up. I laughed out loud with the Titanic thing. With Mark LeClaire in the comments, it was like the unsinkable movie.
That's right.
It's like that movie is going to sink. I'll tell you what. You can tell me that movie's unsinkable, but that one sinks like crazy.
Well, you have to understand. So I'm listening. You know, obviously I wasn't able to do the show last week, and I'm listening to this, and I keep going. They're gonna realize what they're saying, right? They keep saying the movie that doesn't sink, the movie that doesn't sink. I'm like, that was how, like, forget even the movie, obviously. That was the idea behind the Titanic, right? The unsinkable ship. And I'm like, do they realize what they're saying? Like, like, what about the movie that doesn't sink? Oh, we got to find the movie that doesn't sink. I'm like, this is the quest for the Titanic.
Right.
The Titanic is the biggest disaster. Like, historically, they tried to make the thing that couldn't sink. Of course, it sinks. But movie-wise, it was the biggest blockbuster. So, again, we have this representation of, like, say, the atomic bomb being the biggest destruction, but also encoding its very opposite, right? So you're exploding in both directions the same way. It's like you try and make something that doesn't sink, it's going to sink to the biggest degree. So this is where, like, why usually I'm not too worried, and when I said earlier, in my heart of hearts, I'm really not worried about some evil Masonic sorcerer playing with my mind, because I feel like there is, you know, the best laid plans of all men. I don't care if you're, you know, Aleister Crowley or John Dee or whoever you are. You know, you could be brilliant. You could be Stanley Kubrick, whoever you might be. You're not infallible, you know. I was raised Catholic, so I know that when someone tells me that someone's infallible, I know that's bullshit.
Right.
You know, someone tried to tell me the Pope, you know, Pope Nazi was infallible, and I was like, no, he's not. So I'm not going to think that anyone else is either. And I think there's the idea here that, you know, no matter what, this stuff is going to get the better. You know, the nature has a way of stepping in, and things are going to happen in a certain way that we can do our best to, you know, impose our will on them. But these things are going to come out no matter what.
I mean, the Titans fall, right? I mean, the Titanic is named after the Titans, right? And so I was trying to remember what the difference is between plutonium and uranium. Because I'm looking here, Titans, any of the older gods who preceded the Olympians and were the children of Uranus and Gaia. So led by Cronos, who is Saturn, they overthrew Uranus. Cronos' son, Zeus, then rebelled against his father and eventually defeated the Titans. So that's the Titanic has some interesting implications in your Christopher Lloyd thread in that regard.
Yeah, it sure does. I mean, I found that the whole fall of the Titans and the rise of the Greek Olympian gods has just been steeped in sync stuff. Obviously, that's what my whole trilogy is about. But like the Titanic, obviously, the movie syncs in really well.
Well, think about it this way. So, right. So Cronos, Saturn, is the Titan that Zeus overthrows. So this is the we now consider there's actually two different Cronos figures, but right. We've kind of combined them. So Saturn and time basically go hand in hand. What we had earlier, we talked about the Trinity explosion. Well, Trinity is obviously this reference to the Christian Trinity, right? We also have that Oppenheimer famously said, now I am become death, which is actually a mistranslation of now I am become time. So this idea that the Trinity or this crucifixion would also sync with all these time travel motifs around it, when he's saying now I am become time, it just mind-boggling. I mean, you even have when you were talking about the original script for Back to the Future, what I couldn't help but think of is the TV show Futurama. Because in Futurama, he, on New Year's Eve, mind you, at the quote-unquote millennium, I think it's like 1999 to New Year's Eve, Fry falls into like a cryogenic freezer, which is basically your refrigerator, right? He falls into it, gets frozen for like 2,000 years and wakes up in the future. There's an episode called All's Well That Roswell or something like that. And they end up time traveling. He time travels back to 1947. And there's this weird thing, or I guess he had time travels back to 1945. But there's some weird thing where they end up having they interact with the atomic bomb and they drop something, which is the Roswell crash. So they time travel back to the Trinity explosion and end up creating the Roswell crash at the same time. And this is a character who only ended up in the future in the first place because he fell into a freezer. So right. This idea of like Marty McFly being in the refrigerator or the freezer, right?
And then you also have Planet of the Apes connection in 2001 with the frozen people where they all die in both films, right? And then you have the same spot. What lake is that in Utah or whatever the fuck?
Oh, sure. I mean, I'm trying to figure out how is the refrigerator a time travel device? I mean, you know, it's like asking how is a car a time travel device, but.
How's a raven like a lighting desk?
I like your connection to it as cryogenic freezing. It seems to make sense.
Yeah. I mean, so obviously, but I don't know. It's a fascinating thought to me. Is like, what would be the idea behind it? Because when I was doing my breakdown of Groundhog Day and seeing all the Tarot correspondences in the movie, and then Jason found that in the original script, he actually had a curse placed on him with a Hangman tarot card. So there were what that tells us is that the writers already had some idea that there is a. For lack of a better term, proof that they were thinking Tarot when they made Groundhog Day. I'm curious then, what does the refrigerator freezer thing tell us about Back to the Future? I don't have an answer to that.
That they were thinking nuclear Jesus?
Your own personal nuclear Jesus.
Oh, no.
Well, the concept the concept of the refrigerator is insane, really, when you think about it. Like the fact that, like the technology of a refrigerator, and this might not even mean much, but I mean, you plug in this thing and it just creates, like the freezer and the refrigerator, it generates temperature out of electricity. It's sort of like the exact opposite of a nuclear reactor or something. And that you couldn't really have a society as big as a major American city without one. Like, you take that technology away, you got nothing.
Yeah.
You can't have the kind of size of you know, metropolitan matrix that we that makes this whole economy thrive.
Oh, God, I just figured it out, I think, or whatever. I figured, at least for me. Sorry. what was the first name for a refrigerator? Like, before we had a refrigerator, what do we have?
An icebox.
Icebox, exactly. When Saturn, Osiris, Kronos, right, same thing. When Osiris, first time Osiris gets killed, he's put in a box that is found by Isis. Then he's, you know, right?
And right. She, and she by Isis.
Right, your Isis box.
Awesome.
Andy McDowell's Isis box.
So there should be a golden phallus in it then.
I got some Italian sausage in mine.
Isn't the golden phallus the flux capacitor?
Perhaps.
Superimpose that over someone's crotch. I mean, that's... That Y shape is the where the legs meet the torso, and I'm just saying.
I like the Isis box. Isis's box also applies.
Right, which is Isis unveiled. I was considering looking at the nuclear explosion as the opposite side of illumination, like to go when you have like the opposite ends of the spectrum, like further and further into density, meaning descending down the tree, or further and further etheric, ascending, up the tree. You can take that the higher states of consciousness, or whatever you want to say, samadhi, are characterized by further states of paralysis. This is a whole thing in Patanjali, is that you have the highest state is actually you're in complete paralysis. That's why Lotus is so recommended, is to have a firm seat. Otherwise, you lay down. You either do meditation completely on your back, or you're in as secure of a position sitting so that when you reach the higher states, you don't hit your head by falling backwards. This is a whole thing that's expressed by the gurus or whatever. So I find that kind of interesting to look at that as like to freeze. Of course, when Indiana Jones gets in the lead coated refrigerator, you know, in order to save him, you could take it as that the higher states of samadhi, the fact that you're completely in paralysis, is also a kind of protection through the storm wind to get to the other side.
Right. It also relates pretty well to rigor mortis. You know, if you consider death to be, you know, the ultimate ascension, then you could say, you know, the stiffness of being in the icebox or the paralysis is all the same as
right. I'm just saying, like, to die before you die would
yes,
be
exactly.
what the body would indicate anyway. So you're basically imitating the same process. You're just experiencing it early. You're coming early. the second coming. Love me two times.
Love me two times.
Oh, shit.
I wanted to throw in one little more Air Jordan nugget in regards to a possible Masonic conspiracy. After his second retirement, Jordan came back to a particular team in the NBA that changed their name from Bullets to Wizards. So he played for the Washington Wizards for his final, I think, 2 years in the league. So that's kind of a curious little lean towards possible employment by higher-ups in Washington.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, I like when someone points a gun at somebody and they say freeze, and then the fact that they also say eat lead, and the fact that freezers are covered in lead, that was why Indiana Jones... nuclear explosion.
and lead, alchemically, lead and Saturn are the same thing.
Right, there we go. So,
your lead-lined, your lead-lined Isis box would literally be Saturn in the Isis box.
Whoa, man!
What the? So, Jesus. Literally. So Washington Wizards, Air Jordan, Michael Jordan, I know people have sort of sync analyzed him a lot. He's number 23 or 24. I'm totally admitting my sports ignorance here.
23.
he's 23. So of course we have the whole 23 enigma. But what I think is interesting is that 23 is the 23rd letter of the alphabet is W. So if he's number 23 for the Washington Wizards, he'd be www.michaeljordan.com or whatever.
He's also, 23 is also associated with the Puka as well, right, by Robert Anton Wilson. He has this whole weird thing there.
Yeah, Harvey.
Which, if I recall correctly, and you could take it as Air Jordan, is like he's operating on the airplane, in the Four Worlds. So you could look at it as that the airplane is the invisible plane, right, so that you can't see it. It's the invisible realm. And so you could take that as a metaphor. After your post, you blew me away, Bill, with your Serious Man post quite a while back, and I keep thinking about it, and it was like when the rabbi says to the guy, these are the members of the airplane. Was there four members? I was trying to remember that. Does Jefferson Airplane have four members? I don't know, but either way, it's that he's like sending back to him. It's like the significance of him saying that in my lens was that he's showing that he's a Kabbalist, and he sees the Kabbalah in everything. So he's like, I'm hip to it. I can get into Jefferson Airplane through this kind of like way of seeing. And then, of course, the Stormwind shows up right after that. It's actually there during it, despite the boy's knowledge. So which you could take as the Stormwind is also operating on the airplane. So when you're moving through the worlds, you have to cross through this. Threshold, right? Dweller on the threshold. And there's also a significance that you'll see in that when he's approaching him and he looks over on the wall and there's actually a painting of Abraham's son, Isaac. He's about to kill his own son as a sacrifice, and he's being stopped by an angel who many take to be Matat. So you have Metatron reaching out to stop him from killing his son, and how you could look at that as another precursor to the idea of Jesus, who is God's son and is killed by God, apparently. You know, that's how you take it, even though he's killed by Pontius Pilate and the Romans, which I feel is kind of a way to get us to accept corporal punishment, but that's beside the point. This idea that you're being asked to do this, and then you don't do it, and then eventually it happens anyway. That's more complex thing to get into, but I've been looking at the Christopher Lloyd thing through that lens as well when I had first seen the second video that you put out, Joe. So I don't know, putting some stuff out there.
I think there's the idea here that Joe really, I feel like, for at least to my satisfaction, has done a great job of undeniably, as I'm saying, in my opinion, at least to my satisfaction, undeniably shown us this connection between Christopher Lloyd and what he's doing there. What's interesting to me is that, like, before you, Joe, I was looking at Back to the Future as, you notice there's this thing where the dog is the first one to get into the time machine, the DeLorean. Uh-huh. Now we could see, of course, that the dog is named Einstein, who we bring back to the Trinity, like the original atomic bomb, right? So we have Einstein again there. But I was taking the fact that he's a dog, and then Chris Void says, when this baby hits 88 miles an hour, you're going to see some serious shit. So, of course, Sirius is the dog star. So the fact that he's got the dog there and says you're going to see some serious shit. So I was looking at this scene as very much resonating with Sirius, the dog star. And now you've sort of got me to look at it as sort of perhaps flipping it. So, of course, the dog is there. It's just God backwards.
You know, but Jesus in Gematria is 888. So even though it hits 88 miles an hour, you could take that. Sorry.
What is 888?
Jesus.
Oh, okay, interesting. Now, I was thinking also the idea that in Back to the Future, and Back to the Future, what is it, 3, they go back to the Wild West, right? Now, something I realized a year or so ago was that all these old Western tales are inherently alchemical stories. These are stories about gunslingers who literally are exchanging lead for gold, right? They're shooting, you know, it's like, idea of like, you know, they're shooting their lead and they're getting gold in return. Yeah. So there's this.
The wheel, by the way.
What's that?
Revolvers are symbolic of Metatron's wheel, by the way. It seems like that was like the inspiration for the revolver is that. So anyways, go on.
Yeah, exactly. The six shooter. But it seems to me, so we have here in the third Back to the Future, he shows that he's an expert with the six shooter, Marty McFly, right? Because he played all those video games, he already knew how to work the six shooter. So we have this idea of him being one of these guys who knows how to exchange the lead for the gold. What I think would be interesting is if the script writers changed out the lead-lined refrigerator for the golden flux capacitor. You literally, like, we're not seeing it happen on the screen, but in the creative process, the lead got exchanged for gold. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and you could also take it that the Western lands is the Egyptian underworld as well. So he's descending the underworld in order to get the gold. You could take it as such. It's the land of the dead is the Western land. So you have the Wild Wild West too. I don't know if you want to go there with the Will Smith thing.
Well, that's your WWW again. Wild Wild West is the triple W.
Right. Interesting, which is also 23, right? So it's 23, 23, 23. I don't know.
Joe, I need to ask you one more, another question. While I'm sitting here looking at the Skype screen, of course, you have a picture from Jungle Book as your icon, and you had that as your Facebook icon for a while. We actually were talking about the idea of the Egyptian ka last week. Now, from the Jungle Book, that is probably one of my favorite characters of all time, is Ka, the snake, which, of course, he's the master of mind control, and we can look at it in that respect. But he's also Ka, which is this Egyptian idea of the spirit. So what about this Jungle Book character speaks to you?
Well, I like just the picture in particular with the serpent who hypnotizes the protagonist, and I mean that's it. It's as simple as that. And the picture really is beautiful with them just staring into each other's eyes. And it's just, to me, the whole potentially good versus evil, or at least the perceived evil, you know, coming into the life of this hero. And that's it, really.
I like how it looks like they're underwater, kind of, and that's sort of like a fish hook.
It's a toddy. Toddy is not the snake. I can't help but think of how. Okay, so Rudyard Kipling did the Jungle Book, and his most famous poem was called "If." If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, yet make allowance for their doubting too. It's quite long. I won't drop it all right now, but in Apocalypse Now, Dennis Hopper actually says a few lines from it in his description of Kurtz. So when he's explaining Kurtz's level of thinking, he drops "if," and he's of course in the middle of the jungle. But he's also, Kurtz is mind controlling all of those people, right? He has all of these followers, and he says it can be quite tempting to want to become God out there, is how Kurtz is described at the beginning of the film. And so when he's expressing how he's, you know, gotten people to feel like they're making their own decisions, but really making it for them, he uses a Rudyard Kipling poem in order to describe it. And so, of course, with that recognition, there comes for me a flood of sync around man's, you know, quest for fire, man's red flower, you know, and how the red flower is also symbolic of consciousness, because Rudyard Kipling was very hip to he was one of the few British people who was occupying India who was actually hip to their philosophy and respected by the Indians, which I find just fascinating that they, and still today, they have quite a respect for him, even though they have quite a disdain for what the British did there. So, anyways. Interesting.
Hey, Alan, I want to touch on your Einstein dog Sirius thread real quick. So I don't know how concrete this is, but so one thing that I noticed in Back to the Future, if you watch it from the beginning, is I always thought that they were sort of mocking Einstein with having the dog name Einstein and having him go first. In fact, he was originally supposed to be a monkey. So I think
like a space monkey, right.
Space monkey, yeah. So, but at the beginning of the film, I don't know if you remember, but Doc builds this elaborate machine to feed his dog Einstein. And when they turn the cans over, it really looks like it's, you know, taking a shit on the dog's bowl. If you watch it, it's pretty obvious. It just looks like a mound of feces. And next to it is the clock turned upside down. So to me, I interpreted the whole scene as, well, you know, they're mocking Einstein. They're turning his ideas of not being able to time travel upside down, and they're taking a shit on him, basically, because the bowl is marked Einstein. So it's interesting when you said that, you know, the dog is serious, and Doc explains the situation as, you're going to see some serious shit. You know, it's like the serious dog being shit on at the beginning.
He has his revelation on a toilet, just like Luther did of the Protestants, right? And so there's a whole psychoanalytic view that's taken around that premise of like Freud's idea of anality, but that is also the base of the chakras, right? Is literally the anus, and you can also take that as the backside equivalent of Malkut, which is taken as the tip of the genitals, whereas Yesod is taken as the testicles. You could say that the backside is actually the asshole, right? And so for us, you know, to repress, everything is repressed at the base of our spine, including all of our orgon energy. And so when you look at the film, of course, he's Doc Brown, right? You could look at it through that light, that it's actually expressing the same thing. I'm trying to remember.
He's actually Dr. Emmett Brown. So he's emitting.
Oh, he's emitting Brown. Exactly.
He's taking shit.
Huh. Wow. And of course, the flies, they grow in shit, right? Marty McFly.
Right. Yeah. You could also.
His name? Biff is constantly being thrown into the manure. So we have this weird sort of fecal, I don't know, through line.
And they're shitting on Einstein.
Huh. Right. Biff is a fib too, that the whole thing is kind of like they're putting up a lie or something, that there's another side to it. I was considering also that anality is taken as money, that our currency itself is taken as shit in Freudian psychology and beyond in psychology, which is interesting that that's one of the few strange ideas that really actually stuck, is this idea of currency being literally shit, and that our desire to play with feces as a small child, if we have access to it, is like translates over to the way that we relate to money, that it's actually worthless, but that we give it its value.
What does Biff call everybody? Butthead.
That you're basically being ruled by your lower chakras.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And so if you look at since you have this 9/11 connection, if you look at 9/11 as a giant heist, as a big tower heist, which actually the first version of Loose Change that was released, I don't know, they took it out. The ending. I don't know if you guys saw the original version of it, where they actually show you footage of, I forget how many it was. It was something crazy, like 15 to 20 armored cars leaving the rubble of the
Jews. Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember that one.
Directly from there through the Lincoln Tunnel, there's your Saturn, into the New York branch of the Federal Reserve, and basically expressing that this was how they wanted the money elsewhere. They wanted the gold. You could take it as translating over in that way, that they're basically a bunch of people wanting their shit, you know, trying to keep their shit together.
But if I'm just curious, because if there really is an alchemical narrative and not one that I'm just imposing onto it, then obviously you don't just turn lead into gold, you turn shit into gold. So if this movie is starting with all the shit, I wonder if that's not...
It's like the ultimate alchemy is to turn nothing or turn shit into gold.
Yeah.
The Holy Mountain, which was funded by John Lennon. He put $1 million into it through Apple, which I was reading about yesterday in a translated thing because I can't find anything in English about it. But George Harrison refused the part, the main role in The Holy Mountain, because he didn't want to show his asshole. So they were going to clean his asshole, and he didn't want the you know, this beetle being associated with his asshole, which is just the irony of that. The Holy Mountain in the first place, and that you're turning shit into gold, and that he refused. Sorry, that's interesting.
See now, and I guess there's a guy who, I don't know if you've ever listened to, Steve Wilner had a podcast called Cracks in the Wall, and he would have this guy Will777, and this guy Will had this concept that your intestines was the whole concept of time was encoded in your intestines. That he had this sort of pun of like, you stand the test of time. But he saw it as very much your intestines were your time cycle. Now, I think what's interesting, so we have this natural flow of time, a linear progression, but you also have a natural flow of your intestines. So, you know, linear time, you intake food and out comes shit. And literally what you're doing, if you were to go, you know, reverse time or to go back in time, would be essentially vomiting, which we've talked about a number of times on this show as to purge being this sort of holy experience. Well, this would be to reverse time, to turn back time. Would be reverse peristalsis, is reversing the flow of your intestines so that you can vomit.
Right. The actual Hebrew word for, what was it? Like basically the equivalent of like atonement or making your peace is actually the same word for vomiting or to purge. And after a ayahuasca experience, I couldn't help but just see that so bluntly, that's indeed that there is that connection even beyond the drug, what it means to actually purge. It's like
yeah, I had a friend who after an ayahuasca experience, when he said that he started to vomit, and then he found this gray thread, it was interesting, grays, right? He said he found this like gray thread in his vomit, like hanging out of his mouth, and he starts to pull on it, and it just keeps coming and coming and coming. He's just pulling out this huge long gray thread, and then he keeps like vomiting and pulling out this thread, and he finally pulls it all out. And then he said, and then once it was all out of me, I realized what that was. And I'm like, you know, what was it? And he's like, that was my fear. Like, you know, it wasn't, you know, you could argue, was it a literal thing, you know, was it a tangible thing, or was it something he was able to actually perceive in this state, or was it all a metaphor, however you want to take it? But this idea of, to, you know, you had to get this thing out of you.
Right. Well, it is an anti-parasitic too, so that's where I thought it was going. People have many people have reported throwing up parasites with ayahuasca, which is kind of far out.
Oh, sure. Some sort of like tapeworm or something.
And then there's the argument that with parasites, you know, that they also, they're like exactly what we were talking about influencing demons, like demons that influence, you know, like your Kaa snake when he hypnotizes Mowgli. You know, it's like they are actually like, you're like, do I really want this cheese, or is it the fucking parasites inside of me that want it? You know, why do I want the cheese so badly?
That's fascinating. Scary. Yeah. Absolutely. Do you, Joe, as someone who's seen Back to the Future a number of times, can you think off the top of your head, is there any reference to vomiting in either of the three movies?
No, there isn't.
Interesting.
And I can say that with certainty in almost an instant. That's how many times I've seen it.
I believe you. I definitely believe you.
In Back to the Future, what is your the fact that the one thing that Marty brings from the future to that time that I don't remember the movie clearly, obviously, as much as you do, but when he plugs in his guitar and he plays music,
yeah,
he's clearly bringing something that is alien to the past from the future. And this is the whole concept of shamanic time travel, is that information can travel through time, and that music is often heard in states of reverie or dream states. And that in your dream, if you hear a sound and you're able to express it, and you don't know where that sound or that music came from, maybe what the shamans are telling us is that that is encoded information from other times or other planets across the galaxy, that that is the real substance of time travel.
Right.
What is your thoughts on that kind of line of thinking?
Well, I mean, that makes sense to someone not involved in synchromysticism, obviously, with the notion of just sending out, you know, waves into space and how they continue to travel and are still bouncing around. And, you know, someone in however many millennium could pick them up, and you could, in a way, look at that as time travel. Although you'd be getting messages from the past, but in Back to the Future specifically, it's funny that you bring this up, that he brings music back with him, you know, besides the Gray's Almanac, because I feel like they're saying something strange about the music going back, because in the beginning of the movie, I know you say you don't remember it that well, but he goes to Doc Brown's little shack and he hooks his guitar up to the amplifier. You guys remember this scene? It's like a 6 foot tall,
absolutely
giant amplifier. And to me, if you watch this scene and then you go back and watch the movie or any cliche Stargate motif, it's really blatant that Marty, he plugs in this giant blue circular amplifier with these concentric rings. I mean, it's gigantic. It's bigger than a man. And he stands directly in the center of it, or in front of it. So he's poised in the center of it. And then he opens it, obviously. And if you watch it again with the idea of traversing a Stargate in mind, it really resonates strongly with that sort of a theme. And so it's interesting that he does that with music, and then he ends up going, you know, bringing back music to the past, which is also kind of cool. And you also notice if you watch the scene, they kind of highlight this Stargate, and then they highlight his pick, which they show a light bouncing off the very tip of it. And I don't know if you know, on guitar picks, they have this this triangular tip to them that makes them look like a pyramid, and then they highlight it with this this glow at the top of it. You'll have to watch the video to see what I'm talking about. But
yeah, he hits the headstone against the string there, is kind of what you're saying.
Exactly. And then immediately after he does this, or he opens this Stargate, Jesus or Christ calls him and he answers. So he opens a Stargate, he blows it up, and then he picks up the phone and he says, "Doc," you know, he starts talking to Christopher Lloyd right away. So
isn't a guitar, classically a guitar, is six strings? So you have like the six shooter and the six string guitar.
Ah, yeah, cool.
And you know, the instrument that I believe it's, I'm going to get this wrong, so I won't put a specific on it. But the notion of the guy who takes the turtle and scoops out the guts and then strings the guts across the turtle shell to create the lyre, or the lyre, and it's an instrument, and that the seven strings represent the music of the spheres.
Oh, yeah, and also Pan. That was the original meaning of Pan's pipes. You know about that? There's a whole school of thought around that. There's the book by William Sterling, The Canon, gives a full explanation of that. That's pretty far out.
David, I'm so glad you just said pipes, because what I was hesitant to actually bring up, because we've kind of passed it, but you know, we talked about this, the fecal beginnings of Back to the Future. Before Marty gets to Doc's place where he plays guitar, he's constantly clinging to the ship, right? Doc Brown, Emission Brown.
He's just a fly on the wall, all right?
Well, think about it. Before he gets there, actually, the very first thing you see in Back to the Future is that he's riding everyone's ass. He's going down the street on his skateboard with the tailpipes. He's literally riding the ass of every car on the road. So this idea, I'm thinking tailpipe, and you're thinking Pan's pipes. It's just interesting.
Yeah. Huh. And then the whole Saturnian thing throughout it. I mean, isn't it like a million clocks at the beginning? And that's the whole thing. Jesus Christ. The fucking, wasn't it a Pegasus or a unicorn or something? And that other, what was that? Was that Christopher Walken in that too? I'm trying to remember your first video, Joe.
Oh, yeah. So you're talking about in Anastasia, where he summons Pegasus, or, you know, his lightning carrier. Actually, I never actually mentioned this or even blogged about it anywhere, but what he's doing when he summons the Pegasus is he's trying to become resurrected, or, you know, play out this Christ story, but he does it in the same Back to the Future storyline where he comes from the center of this clock tower and he plots his resurrection, essentially. I don't know if you guys have ever seen the cartoon Anastasia, but it's also the same story as Back to the Future. I mean, you can take him in the clock tower in Back to the Future, how he comes out and plots to dethrone Cronus or erect Zeus, Jesus. And in Anastasia, he does the same thing from his home in this little clock tower where he plans to kill Anastasia or you know, resurrect himself. So it's pretty fascinating.
Wow.
But I wanted to add one more thing about Marty and the guitar, because in one of the videos I connected him as a Hades resonator or Pluto. And, you know, as far as him, you know, playing music and being a guitar player, he's in this band called the Pinheads. And if you know about, you know, Clive Barker's Pinhead from Hellraiser.
You're saying Michael J. Fox was in a band called the Pinheads?
No. Marty McFly is.
Oh, in the story.
Yeah, in the story.
Okay, go on.
Yeah, that's it. So it just obviously connects him to Pinhead from Hellraiser and Pluto.
And which is Metatron,
right?
Obviously. Right. I mean, that's why he's got the cube as the gateway. So he's Metatron and he's also the pineal gland and expressing the nature of the thing and what's being spoken to.
Right. The connection of Back to the Future and Buckaroo Banzai too, and the whole pineal gland journey is really deep in both of those.
So totally. David mentioned that the Western lands as being the Egyptian underworld. That's right. I forgot you had Marty as Hades, because that makes perfect sense. Do you know the phrase Beelzebub? It's actually like a play.
It means Lord of the Flies.
Yes, exactly. It means Lord of the Flies. It's actually a sort of like a...
Oh, dude, I got it. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I got my fucking mind blown. So Lord of the Flies, they put up the beast, which is the pig's head, right?
Yes.
Which is like, thing is maybe there is a beast or maybe it's only us. Fucking Marty McFly is Michael J. Fox. Fox is 666. F is the sixth letter of the alphabet. O is the 15th. X is the 26th. Is the 24th. And so here you have Marty McFly is the beast of Lord of the Flies. He's your fucking Beelzebub.
Yes.
Sorry, I went in.
But see, because... Oh, fuck, man.
What
see,
is,
so I was going with the Beelzebub. Go ahead, Bill. Go ahead, Bill.
No, I can figure it out. Keep going.
No, please.
I was going to say, what is Fox equal? The 615... What was it?
It's in order. So F is the sixth letter of the alphabet. O is the 15th. So 5 plus 1 is 6. X is the 24th. So 2 plus 4 is 6. So it's 6.
And that all adds up to 45?
No, well, I mean, it's 666.
Well, 6 plus 24 plus 15 equals 45, right?
Oh, okay, that's where you're going with it.
Well,
yeah,
I'm just saying that the only other number that Michael Jordan wore in the NBA was 45.
And what else was... See, that's so funny, because that's what I was just thinking. Michael J. Fox is what he also was famous for, Teen Wolf, where he's a basketball player, right? And he's the beast... And because I was thinking he's the wolf, right? The whole idea of this serious shit. So this like dog or wolf. So he becomes, after he goes 88 miles an hour and has some serious shit, he becomes the teen wolf. This idea of the, you know, becoming the serious man. I love this. Now, you know, Joe, actually, so I know you play basketball. There's this idea. Have you seen Richard Arrowsmith's, video? I mean, or I'm sure you're aware of this idea, this Mayan concept of the Mayan basketball court. This idea of the 2012 alignment, and there is a connection to the, for lack of a better term, the old basketball game of the Mayans.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, this is interesting to me as well to see this idea of, when we talk about the Stargate or concentric circles, a basketball hoop seen from above is that same idea, is you have to align. Right, you would have to align these rings in such a way that you can actually pass through.
Ooh,
right, you pass through the tin.
If they won, they get their heads chopped off.
Yeah, and then so the opposing team wears them on their belt, I think.
Oh, it's the Red Queen. That's awesome.
Well, it's War of the Flies again. You see the pig head.
Yeah. They put the pig head on the pole, which was reminding me of what I was just saying about Legion. He's Legion for his many, and then they send the pigs into the Jordan. They all drown in the Jordan. just the, I don't know, it's just reminding me of it, because they think there's this beast out there, and they fucking find the thing, and it's just a pig, and then they stick its head on a pole. Or no, what is it? They put the pig head up to keep the beast away. I can't remember. I haven't read Lord
right,
of
but if you go, if we want to take this from the Egyptian angle again, I mean, Set, the Osiris's brother who kills him is represented as a pig very often. So, yeah, so you have this idea of Set being the pig and his, you know, being the one who kills time. So I think this idea of Marty as the Hades, Lord of the Flies, really, really runs through very strongly.
Michael J. Fox's middle name is Andy, which actually means human, right? So the words from its roots is human, which is the number of a beast, which is the number of a man. Man is actually Andrew. Andy is the name of the the Antichrist or whatever, the devil in Rosemary's Baby. But that's kind of another interesting level to it, to acknowledge that the name literally just means human being, which is expressing that it's all of us. Because that's the big thing in Lord of the Flies. It's like maybe there is a beast and maybe it's just us. Which, you know, I was taking, I went on this whole thing with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, but you have the scarabs and the dung ball that the Beatle pushes as the Rolling Stones, and their interplay, and how you have Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, which pictures the Beast as the cornerstone of the album cover, but then you have there's Satanic Master's Request, which is emphasizing that it's at the request of the Beast, but then that they're also supposed to be our own voices. So they're speaking for us is what they were supposed to be. And so when you listen to American Pie and the way that they're presented of how the marching band refused to yield and how the Rolling Stones basically light the sacrificial rite, referring to Altamont, they're expressing that we were, you know, the players tried to take the field, but the marching band refused to yield. They refused to move aside and let us do our thing. And so they wanted to continue to be our voice, which is, it's an interesting way to take it in that regard as what the nature of the beast is. Because, I mean, this is like the do what thou wilt, right, was the ultimate message of the beast. But then it's like, at which point does that actually get achieved, you know?
It's interesting because Michael J. Fox broke through and became famous by playing a young Republican in a liberal hippie family on Family Ties.
Nah.
Yeah, Alex P. Keaton, right?
Yeah, yeah. So there's something. How would he become Republican in a household of liberal hippies? What would have change this little individual's perspective? Would it be simply disdain for his parents, or would it have been looking at the television and coming to his own opinion based on information he was getting? It seems curious that, you know, the development of that character's outlook towards the world is so in such opposite confliction with everyone else in the family. But he's obviously shown as the smartest one in the family. It's an interesting kind of...
I've been thinking about Family Ties. I swear to you, I've been thinking about it all week. It's the weirdest thing. Maybe subconsciously I realized we were going to speak to Joe and the whole Michael J. Fox thing, but I actually had a slew of synchronicities around Family Ties that's just bizarre. It's been for probably a week, week or a half. Oh, Michael Keaton, right. Michael J. Fox, Alex P. Keaton. So Michael and Keaton is Batman. That's incredible. That's incredible. And I was thinking, Joe, you mentioned Anastasia. Isn't in the movie Anastasia, isn't there a bat?
His little sidekick is a little white bat.
And that's like Rasputin's sidekick?
Yeah, he makes great white guano, too.
Oh, yes, exactly. Damn. Okay.
That's funny. I was just looking up when you were talking about the orange marmalade earlier. I have a copy of Alice's Adventures Underground in the hand. It's the handwritten version of Lewis Carroll's original Alice in Wonderland.
Sure, yeah. I have a digital version of that.
I turned to the part that Jason was pointing out about do cats eat bats? Do cats eat bats? Do bats eat cats? And how the Catwoman, Batman connection, their relationship, and how he went on a whole crazy line of thinking just around that one line. I don't know. It just was occurring to me.
He's talking about Hathor, right? Is that what he was discussing?
That Jason Barrera was speaking to.
Yeah.
He went in a bunch of different directions, but yeah, he may have done that. I can't remember. It was a minute ago, but yeah, I don't know. I just that was weird. I don't know.
So Bill just dropped in here. Fox is one of four members of the Leo and Me cast and crew who eventually developed Parkinson's disease in midlife, an unusually high number that led to some investigation as to whether or not environmental factor may have played a role. And I don't know what Leo and Me is, but I actually was going to mention this earlier. I mean, there's this idea. So the idea of Fox, right? Fox is 666, Leo being the lion, the sun king. We have this idea of Leo being the lion, the sun king, which, of course, is the beast. He said is the sun. So we have this Leo sun connection. Do you know any idea what this is, Leo and Me? And may I just also add that if you're familiar with in Watchmen, isn't that how they get rid of Dr. Manhattan?
Is Parkinson's?
How everyone who worked with him ended up getting cancer.
Yeah, it's the same general concept.
Right.
Interesting that you mentioned Watchmen because of the whole Bat and Oz connection too. I didn't mention that yet. Sorry.
No, please mention now. Yeah.
No, just that in Watchmen, obviously, you have Ozymandias and the Bat precursor. I forget his name. Owl Man, and
Night Owl.
Yeah, and the Bat and Oz thread is just something I've been following for a while. Sometimes I forget that other people don't. And followed it, but just with Batman and Gotham City being Oz or New York, and Ozzy Osbourne being famous for biting off the head of the bat, and then you have Christopher Lloyd Oz and his accompanying bat in Anastasia. So just a common strange little thread.
Yeah, you could also say that bat is tab backwards, and when Dorothy enters Oz, she gets hit with a window pane, which is a tab of acid. I mean, window pane. Basically gets hit with a bat, which definitely reminds me of put down the bat, Wendy. Weird.
Well, of course, this was an old sinkhole thing, but going back to what is on Google right now, the Jackie Robinson, the Batman, the idea of the baseball player as the Batman.
Yeah. Jordan played baseball too, by the way, and was a designated hitter or a designated batter.
Huh.
So he was a Batman. Incredible.
Well, he retired. He retired and went and played professional baseball, and then he came back to basketball.
Yeah, he went to the minor leagues. Did he play? He didn't play. Did he play at AAA?
I think he played the AA.
He went to the AA.
Exactly.
Hey, you know that film Contagion? It's not very good, but it's got it's about a disease that wipes out a good portion of the earth or whatever. And the disease gets carried initially by a bat that drops something on a pig. It's a combination between a pig and a bat that starts the disease.
Was it Manfair Bat?
I don't know. I don't know. I thought that was interesting. I kept on thinking of the I have a crazy synchronicity I found when I was in junior high between Charlotte's Web and Pink Floyd's Animals. Pink Floyd's Animals as soon as Paramount fades out, and The run is just completely unfucking believable. But that flying pig on the front cover, and I went to see Roger Waters, so did Bill, and that flying pig is a really interesting idea. I was looking at the pig as a combination between a bat and that light at one point. But I don't completely know where I'm going with that. I know that Templeton was a rat, and they look at rats as or at bats as flying rats. I think it's interesting that bats tend to carry a lot of diseases that don't affect them. That the idea of being able to integrate a disease by being, you know, filthy enough that it doesn't affect you, and pigs tend to be the same way. It's kind of interesting.
So Marty is in Back to the Future. Lorraine is Marty's girlfriend, right? Oh no, it's his mother. It's his mother.
Of his girlfriend at one point.
Well, yeah, exactly. But I'm sorry. What I was trying to get at is apparently, do you know what her maiden name is?
I'm
looking at IMDb, so I'm cheating here. But that's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see what the other names were. His mom's name is Lorraine Baines. So here we have the Batman Dark Knight connection again. His mom is the Bane.
What was I saw a picture. I'm trying to look for it right now. Of like, there's a picture of him with his mom in Back to the Future, and it says, "You know, it'd be weird if had a son that looked unbelievably like a guy that you were trying to fuck when you were a teenager." Okay, hold on. Oh no, here it is. I just found it. Oh wait a minute, no, there's a different one. But I'm from the future, and I'm your baby. I just met you, and this is crazy, but I'm the future, and I'm your baby. Okay, never mind. I thought that would be. I thought that was funny. What? You know what'd be weird?
Yeah, okay, so she's the Bane. I'm sure we've all seen it. There was a video made by, I think, Jay Kotze and Jim Sanders, which really laid out the Michael J. Fox and Michael Jordan connection with, like, the Air Jordans and, like, all this sort of stuff. Have you guys seen that video?
I think it was Jim that made it.
Yeah, I think it might have been Jim.
Yeah, it's called... But that, I forget.
It's a really good... It's a really good video, and I'm just wanna, if anyone listening hasn't seen it yet, if you want to delve a little deeper into some of the backstory here, I'm gonna find that video and link it up, because that's, I think that adds a really nice context to everything we're talking about here.
And you're
too much about it. It's been a while since I saw it. It's with Little Bow Wow, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What's with all the rappers with Lil in relation to Lil as being Lilith? Do you make any connection with that, David, or anyone else? Lil Wayne is like, you know, like a little Batman, but like a little Bruce Wayne. There's a million of these Lils, and I'm wondering if anyone had a kind of read on that.
I think it's just an ironic little disclaimer, because rappers tend to actually be pretty small in stature, so maybe they're just trying to get it out of the way.
Hey, that's the cover story, bro. Truth is.
Okay, check this out. I'm looking at Back to the Future 3 here, okay? Check out some of these names. So Biff Tannen's ancestor is Buford, quote, Mad Dog Tannen. So he's the dog again, right? In Leah Thompson, instead of being the mother, she becomes Maggie McFly. We have this idea of the magpie or the pie of shit. But Mary Steenburgen, that's who we were trying to remember. The Dr. Emmett Brown, if he's the Christ, if he's the split Adam, and all these sort of things, who does he end up with but Clara Clayton. She's the Lady of Clay, which when we split the atom, when we split the Adam, we're creating the feminine principle, right? That piece of the man of clay, you're taking a piece of him. So she's Clara Clayton. I think that's interesting.
Yeah. What's up with the little midget at the end who points at his dick in Back to the Future 3? You know about that.
Oh, yeah. On the train?
Yeah,
he's actually a kid. He's not a midget, but he's just a little kid. The official story is that he just had to piss during filming, but it looks pretty demonic, actually, if you watch it. It's pretty scary.
It's like giving a little message there. He's not, I don't believe that for a fucking second.
Okay, my opinion is that he was trying to say that one of the cast members or directors was touching him there. That is just my personal opinion.
So Andras Jones, who who has his own connection to Andy the Moonchild and all this sort of stuff, Andras said he was in an episode of some alien TV show, Alien Nation. He was in an episode of Alien Nation, and they filmed a scene at the observatory the tunnel, the Doc Brown's tunnel. On top of that, that observatory, the something Park Observatory.
Griffith Park.
Yeah. So he said they shot a scene exactly there, because I actually showed Andras your films, Joe, and he was like, oh, that's so weird. And one of the things that he's mentioned to me is he filmed a scene from Alien Nation at that place, and he said at some point the director made him do something that was really, really weird. And he said the director made him make an OK sign, which, some people can make a 666, right? If you take your thumb and your pointer finger, put them together. Some people have said that means 666.
Yep.
But he said, so the guy made him do that and look towards the Hollywood sign and then make this really weird, kissing the circle and then pulling it away. And he said he felt like the director was basically making him kiss an asshole. Symbolically kiss an asshole. And that was how he really felt. He's like, the director had a very specific thing he wanted him to do, and it was very awkward of how he wanted him to do it. And so this idea, just sort of bring it full circle for whatever reason, that space, there's some extra layer there that's probably an unpleasant connotation here.
Is the observatory at the end of Bowfinger during the alien chase, is that that same observatory? Do you know what I'm talking about with Eddie Murphy? Eddie Murphy has braces in that film. You guys have ever seen Bowfinger? He has to cross the freeway, and he's terrified of it.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, well, is that the same I don't know. I was wondering if that's
filmed in the film was filmed in Los Angeles, so there was a tunnel. I'm assuming that was it.
It's not the tunnel. It's the observatory itself. Griffith Park, Griffith's Observatory, Bowfinger. Yeah, yep. That is it. Okay, so it says the Griffith Park Observatory, but that was the whole thing. Is that they caught the part of the film that they're making within the film. It climaxes at the top of that observatory with alien contact. So there's an alien contact that's taking place there in the movie Heavy Rain, I believe is what it's called. I don't know. I just thought that was another alien connection to the observatory. Kind of weird.
Location as being some sort of spot of contact or whatever, because that's just a thread I've been on for a long time, is that Los Angeles itself is, which it's obviously a node for transmitting the media to the masses, which is itself a method of ascension. But I always thought that in the way that we think of New York as some sort of strange stargate, I definitely thought of Los Angeles in the same breath.
Douglas Bowles from 42 Minutes, he has when I visited him out in Idaho, he had this book, which was someone had made an adaptation of Dante's, Divine Comedy, and they did Los Angeles as hell or the underworld. And I think, I don't remember what purgatory was and then New York heaven. But it's interesting, this idea of even in the movies, Percy Jackson, where the entranceway to Hades is in, but it's behind the Hollywood sign or something.
Right.
So this
right.
idea of hell or the underworld being with Los Angeles is very common thread.
I just looked up the Griffith Observatory, and the amount of films is significant, obviously, but the specific films are all, like, very suggestive. Like, here you have War of the Colossal Beast in 1958 took place there, Flash Gordon, Phantom Empire. Phantom Empire is interesting. I mean, Malkuth literally is empire. House on Haunted Hill, Queen of the Damned. It's like Transformers.
John C. Austin, the architect of the observatory, was a high level Freemason. Basically, all the buildings that he built were auditoriums for Freemasonry. They were temples, they were shrines, and they were built with obelisks. Los Angeles City Hall is just this big phallic monument. The Shrine Auditorium, Hollywood Masonic Temple is one that he built, and the Griffith Observatory too.
So. Wow. The Terminator, which deals with time travel, they used that for. Terminator Salvation, they used it again, which is interesting. And Transformers centers around Metatron's cube, which they call the AllSpark, as the animating what animates the life of the Transformers. The Transformers are, without any shadow of a doubt, in my mind, representative of the angelic intelligences. Angels are described in anything Kabbalistic as simply mechanical. They just do what they're programmed to do, basically, and they just run on inertia once they're set going. So it's very, very much seems to be the case there. But there's also another alien idea to have this observatory there. That's interesting. Like, people would make the argument that, oh, well, it's in L.A. Of course, it's going to be in a lot of films. But they're definitely, like, looking at this list, it's not actually that long. And the the specific films are definitely noteworthy in the realm of symbolism.
Definitely, and even in the way that the observatory and the tunnel are portrayed within those films is also seems to be very selectively surrounding, like, strange topics. Like, if for example, in Austin Powers, which just seems to be a really harmless film, Dr. Evil's lair on the back of the Hollywood sign, which I consider to be kind of in conjunction with the observatory. They're less than a mile apart. Actually, they might be exactly 1 mile apart. But if you stand on the observatory, you can see the Hollywood sign. They're right next to each other. But anyways, so his lair is behind the Hollywood sign, and just the whole use of the sign in the observatory. Like, for example, they zoom in on the Hollywood sign to go into his lair, and as they go into the sign, they zoom directly in on a caduceus that he's wearing on his uniform. So just the whole notion of this area as some sort of ascension portal is kind of highlighted by that.
Hmm.
And also, I don't know if you guys are familiar or you've heard Jose Escamilla talk about the Battle of Los Angeles, and obviously that describes alien contact in LA. So,
well, Israel Regarde, I was told by my rabbi actually that he was one of the main secret founders of Hollywood. That he was that was his favorite hangout spot, which is just interesting for the argument of there being kind of secret societies. I mean, it's not ultimately so secret, but the idea that that had an influence in Hollywood, the esoteric side of it. That's a huge supporting component there.
Yeah, I agree that the whole foundation of the area is steeped in some sort of sacred knowledge secrecy. And one thing that I like to point to is that if you Google Hollywood or how it got its name, there's a lot of differing stories. And no one can point to anything exactly.
Yeah.
But one thing that I like to look at is that in the observatory, which basically is attached to this Hollywood sign, you could look up a video of just how close they are. I consider them the same territory, essentially. But in the observatory is this giant mural with that pays tribute to all these gods. But it also has John Hollywood in there, who himself is sort of a strange and secretive figure in history. But he's generally attributed to have come up with all these brilliant mathematical works that were basically delivered to him through secret societies or some secret means that he never really divulged, but they basically explained all kinds of things relating to how the Earth wasn't flat or certain theorems that helped us solve, you know, whatever mathematical conundrums we were having at the time. But it represented great leaps forward in astronomy and in human progression. And so you having this giant sign that says Hollywood that clearly is more than just, you know, advertising a housing development, you know. And then you have this mural with all these important figures. And then for some reason, John Hollywood is in there. And you just kind of say, well, you know, this is kind of the same territory and they're kind of linked together. And there must be something strange going on here, especially considering that, you know, the architect of that observatory and the whole thing is kind of built by the Masons and secret societies.
Can you guys hear him right now?
Yep.
Did you hear all that?
Yep.
Okay, I got cut off for a second. But that's fine.
You didn't miss anything.
I heard I heard most of it. Griffith comes from Griffin, most likely, right? So etymologically, there's an argument for that. And the Griffin is a lion and an eagle, which is interesting because those are two of the seraphim parts, right? So when you move through the storm cloud, when you come to the other side, there's this seraphim in Ezekiel's vision. I don't know. I just find that kind of interesting in and of itself. Also, Griffith means Lord or something. Griffin. Hold on. Let me look it up. Griffith. What does Griffith mean?
Well, there's also a big scene with in Alice in Wonderland. There's the big scene with the Griffin and the Mock Turtle. So here we have this turtle, which is used to not only make the musical instrument, but also the each. Yeah, Bill, before you mentioned the turtle classic origin there. So,
you kind of cut out there for the last 15 seconds.
Oh, okay. I mentioned Alice in Wonderland. So in Alice in Wonderland, there's a big scene where Alice meets the Griffin and the Mock Turtle. And I was thinking about the connection between the turtle. You mentioned earlier the turtle as the musical instrument, but also we have the turtle as the origin of the I Ching.
Yeah, yeah.
So here we have this idea of flexible units of time, musical scales, all this sort of stuff, and the Griffin there, just bringing it back to Alice. I just, you know, in my mind, everything goes back to Alice.
Sure, it's inevitable. I like that the back of the turtle shell is Klepo to shell, right, is hexagonal. So you can see I used to have a pet turtle, and I always used to trip out on this, is hexagon back part. And so to tie it with the I Ching is very, very fitting. Also to retreat into a shell, it's kind of interesting. I don't know. What do you... I see. I'm sorry. I'm reading what you're writing here. So, okay. So we got 10 or 15 minutes left.
Yeah, I gotta ship off to work soon.
Okay. Cool.
Well, Joe, I've always wanted. I heard you on 42 Minutes. I think you've been on there twice with Will and Doug, and I just got such a kick out of your time with them, and I loved your videos. So, this is, what I wanted to do is just do this sort of sync jazz riffing that we sometimes do here, which is just, all right, someone mentioned something, what do you got, and play with these ideas. And that's something I was really looking forward to doing with you. But let's just take if we only got a few minutes left, let's take a little time, just tell people where they can find your videos, things like that, and if there's anything you want to drop about any of this latest stuff that we didn't get to mention.
So you just go to YouTube, and I have the username barelyhuman11, and they're all there. There's six of them. So, but that's it. So I don't have a blog or anything like that. So if you want to check them out, just go to YouTube.
Didn't the Batman video get something like 18,000 hits so far?
I'm sorry?
Didn't the Batman Dark Rift of the Soul video get something like 18,000 hits so far?
Yeah, it's it got 15,000 in like the first 2 weeks.
That's funny.
I was actually, the crazy thing is that often happens with these videos is like not just the syncs involved in them, but the creation of them and the whole process is steeped in sync. Like, for whatever reason, with my other video, I was like, no one's going to understand or give a shit about this stuff. With this video, I was like, I remember telling my girlfriend, I was like, this is the one. Like, I'm telling you, everyone's going to want to see this video. And it was just, it was crazy. It panned out. So.
Does that freak you out a little bit? I mean, that's kind of a lot of exposure to get where, I mean, it just shows the power of the internet network that, you know, your work is known and people are watching it.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it freaks me out. It definitely makes me glad to know that I'm making something that other people connect with, because it's always fun to just make things for the, you know, sake of artistry. But it's every once in a while you want to make something that, you know, people are really feeling and connecting with and wanting to share with others. Because, you know, when you get hits on YouTube, it's really about word of mouth, because it's not like I advertise anything. So it's nice to know people are going to their friends saying, hey, you got to check this out. Even if they are just saying, because it's so stupid.
I don't think that's the case. I mean, I guess it's on YouTube, you never know. But I really don't think it's the case. I mean, I think there's something to your videos where I don't think anyone could come away saying, that's so stupid. And I don't think I'm biased. It's like there was something in the video before that, like the Oz and the Oz, where I was like, okay, he's being silly. Like, I'm laughing. Like, this is silly. And it wasn't like I thought it was stupid. I just thought, like, okay, this is funny. And then there are, like, points in there where I'm like, oh, man, that's not silly at all. Like, it's a really valid point.
Right.
So there's something about these videos where you have very, very great talent for laying out a narrative. This is there's something like, all right, Will Morgan and I have had this conversation about you many, many times. Take this for what you will. But we feel like your videos are what Jake Kotze's videos would have been if he had kept going. And like, he had a sort of like early style and then kind of went from there and then like really changed his whole sort of approach. And we're like, if Jake kept going and developed in that trend, that's where you are. And it's amazing to me that someone that you came into this thing at such a fantastic skill level, and not just for being able to pick up the syncs, but to make these videos. What I'm saying is, like, you lay out these things, and there's in every video there reaches a point where you start to go, oh, I don't know, he's just stretching it here, and then boom, like within 30 seconds, there's something that's so heavy that so pulls it all together that you go, no, okay, this is really, really solid. And,
well, it's because you're open, right? I mean, you watch your videos, you're just so open to possibility that even if something like isn't an actual etymological connection or there's no connection other than the sound of something, there is a connection that leads to that you really can't discount. And so it's like that kind of – it helps you put yourself in that mindset. It's good.
Thank you. Thanks, Alan. You saying that. Yeah, I definitely want to give Jake credit because I certainly emulated his style completely. But I'm just glad to see that I'm actually making stuff that people are liking and that sort of thing. But I do want to say for a second that, you know, I never want to take full credit for any sync or anything that someone finds compelling in my videos, because I really feel strongly about the fact that, you know, I don't feel responsible for making the videos. I honestly feel like the videos want to make themselves, and that might sound strange in the sense that of channeling or whatever you want to call it. But I mean, there's a lot of times where I have crazy sync threads where I'm like, this needs to be made. This video and these syncs need to be shared by other people. But for whatever reason, it doesn't materialize. Whereas, you know, these ones that I have produced, they really just materialize themselves. And I really don't even go search for the syncs. They just kind of find me as I'm making the video. And for whatever reason, it seems like the video wants to be made. So
you feel like as you're making these that more things occur than you could have ever have predicted, like in the process, like you get inspired by a little piece of something and then as you're making it, it kind of builds on itself.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even call it inspiration. I would just call it as it's just exponentially steep. I get exponentially steeped in sinks that just fall into my lap simply by the intention of creating a video, not even a specific video, because for most of these, I've sat down and wanted to make something completely different than what ended up happening. And it's almost like the information that made its way into the video was like, hey, I see that you're making a video about the secrets held in the principles of the universe. I want to be in your video. And it's like, and they just kind of weasel their way in. I know it sounds a little bit ridiculous, but you know, how I feel. That's what I feel happens. Like I'll go on Google, for example, to search for something that fits in the video, and something completely irrelevant will pop up, and it'll actually be, you know, a better thread, and it'll actually be what did fit. And I never intended to search for it. It's in no way related in the practical or logical sense, but it somehow weasels its way in. So
just to say, the book that I'm working on, right, there was this like thing where I was going to mention this specific like goddess, like this underworld goddess. And I was just like, that's one more tangent that I don't think I really need to go on. You know, like you always like doing any kind of sync thing like this, you always kind of have to cut stuff out, right? It's like, all right, you can't put it all in there because everything syncs. So it's like, all right, let's just kind of cut to the meat of the stuff. So I was like, no, okay, I don't think I'm going to put this in there. And then I got slammed with synchronicities for this one goddess to the extent that I actually had to question. And I mean, I don't even think I believe this, but I have to at least ponder it. It was like, this was a real, whether it's an archetype or an actual goddess or whatever it is, that it was like so persistent that I was finally like, okay, fine, you want to be in the book, I'll put you in the book. And I was like, it was something so weird. It's like, all right, you obviously want to be in there, so all right, let's do it.
That's exactly how I feel. Yeah, it's like talking to some sort of archetypal force is like, hey, I want to be in your movie too, like, you know, let me in. Look what movies I'm involved in. I'm like, I'm a cool force too. You know, talk about me.
I think that's a big part of what this all kind of comes down to. I remember a Tom Petty interview where he said, I don't write songs, you know, like the songs are out there and I just need to find them. I mean, that's like whenever you're in an inspired state, that's how it seems to work. You know, everything kind of just comes to you, you know, if you're open to it. So.
Well, they talk about that in the Renaissance Hermeticism stuff, that the furor of poetry is that it should, you know, burst through you, that you're sort of just, you know, that conduit. And there's the fury of, you know, poetry and mathematics and all these kind of insights, and that it can be depressing when the fury isn't with you, when it's just not the time, you know. So sync waves definitely occur. I think you can see that with certain bloggers where they'll write and write and write and then they kind of go dormant for a while. But they always sort of come back, but they're always twisting their previous work in new and more complicated ways. So I think that's why when you came out with your Dark Drift of the Soul video, everyone was kind of pumped up about it because we hadn't heard from you in a while. And I think that you definitely didn't disappoint with the quality on that one. So...
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I really just try to make the videos as 100% as organic as possible. There are some times where I sit down and I'm like, you know, I want to make a video because that's kind of what I do. But going through the process, I realize, like, you know, it doesn't happen unless the video wants to be made. So I just have to sit back and say, you know, if in 5 months something wants to be expressed, then it'll happen. And if it doesn't, then I can't force it because it'll end up just being trash. So...
Well, I think we're out of time, but thank you so much for joining us, Joe.
Guys, I really want to thank you a lot for having me. I had a great time, and I really love listening to your guys' podcast.
Thank you, Joe. We'd love to have you back again in the future. You keep making great videos. We'll hopefully keep making podcasts people enjoy, and we'll definitely do this again.
Cool. Sound good. Tell me not to, but I'll be going this time. All I wanted to do was a